This morning in Shir, I wanted to go over a few of the minhagim of Erev Yom Kippur. Erev Yom Kippur actually has a lot of minhagim, a lot of things that are specific to it. And I thought to explore particularly three. If we have a little time at the end, maybe I'll talk for 2 minutes about Kol Nidre, which is really a minhag of Erev Yom Kippur, not a minhag of Yom Kippur. I gave Shir about that on that last week. I assume it's probably available somewhere uploaded about Kol Nidre. But let's begin with, I think, the three minhagim that I've laid out for everybody here. And the first one is something that we actually did encounter a very long time ago when we learned Maseches Avodah Zarah, Daf Hey, I think it is. And this may be the only, if I call it, minhag of Erev Yom Kippur, which is actually a minhag de oraisa. Now, the Gemara in Yoma, in the last parak, it's the first source, speaks about the mitzvah of Tosefes Yom HaKippurim, the idea that you have to add on a little bit. You have to be Mosif Mechol Al HaKodesh. The position, interestingly enough, of the Rambam is that the Rambam doesn't have such a thing by Shabbos, by Yom Tov, or by the prohibition of Malach on Yom Kippur. The Rambam has only one concept of Mosif Mechol Al HaKodesh when it comes to Shabbos and Yom Tov, and that is for Inui, for fasting on Yom Kippur, there's an idea of being Mosif Mechol HaKodesh, not for Malacha, not on Shabbos, not on Yom Tov. In Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber quotes Tosefes Shabbos, certainly. I don't know if he quotes Tosefes Yom Tov, but in Simon Reish Samach Aleph, he has the idea of Tosefes Shabbos. The Rambam doesn't, and the reason has to do with the source for Tosefes Yom HaKippurim. So the Gemara writes as follows, L'chidetanya v'ini semes nafsho sechem, so the Torah says that you should be ma'ana your nefesh. You should engage in fasting and perhaps other afflictions on the ninth of the month, which of course we know is not true because the next word is bo'eret, in the evening. Nonetheless, the Torah describes it as the ninth day. So yochol yaskel v'yis'ana b'tisha. Maybe you should have to fast the ninth day also. Talmud lomar bo'eret. No, it says b'sishol achodesh bo'eret. Not in the main part of the day, but towards in the evening of the day. If the mitzvah fasting is only when it's actually night, when it's the night of the 10th already, then you might think that you don't have to start at all before. Talmud lomar b'sisha, that the Torah uses, does refer to as the ninth. Ha-ketzad, how do you get both? B'sisha l'chodesh on the one hand, and bo'erev on the other hand, the answer is, you start the fast a little bit early. Mikan shemosifin mechol al hakodesh. So that's how you know you're supposed to be add on from what is not Yom Kippur to the kedusha of Yom Kippur. Ve'ein li'ela b'knisa. So that you would think that only applies to when Yom Kippur starts. What about on the back end? What about at Motzei Yom Kippur? That maybe do you had? How do you know that you have to take a little bit of Motzei Yom Kippur, the 11th of Tishrei, and add it on to the fast? Hamalomar may erev ad erev. The pasuk is b'sishal achodesh ba'erev, may erev ad erev tishbesu shabbat achem. Which, incidentally, by the way, is one of the two explicit places in the Torah that the halachic day, when it comes to Shabbos and Yom Tov, begins at night as opposed to beginning it during the day. So then the Gemara had another Tana who learned the idea of mosifa mechal al hakodesh from a different pasuk. And the Gemara makes reference to this now and says, V'tana de etzem etzem, who learns the concept of Tosefes Yom HaKippurim from a different verse, Hai b'sisha l'chodesh my avidlei. So what does he do with this pasuk? If you don't need this pasuk of b'sisha l'chodesh ba'erem to teach us Hosafa mechol al hakodesh, that you have to add on from the 9th and 11th to make a bigger Yom HaKippur, so then what does he do with the pasuk? What he learns it from somewhere else. So what do you learn from b'sishal achodesh barim? The Gemara says, "Mi boy leilechet tani chia barav mi difti." You need it for the following brayse. The tani chia barav mi difti. The inisem esnaf shosechem b'sisha. So again, he reads it that way. But inisem b'sisha. You fast on the ninth. The chia b'sisha misanim. You don't fast on the ninth. The haloba also misanim. You fast on the tenth. Alaloma lecha kala ocha b'shosa b'chi ma'ala lavakasav kilu isana chi vasir. Anybody who fasts on, anybody who eats and drinks, the way Rashi explains, in preparation for the fast on the ninth, Kadosh Baruch Hu gives him credit or her credit as if they had fasted 2 days. On the assumption is that most of us enjoy eating, most of us don't enjoy fasting. Therefore, someone who is misane, someone who's ochav a shos on the 9th, gets credit as if they fasted not only the 10th, but they fasted on the 9th as well. I presume that only holds true if you actually fast on the 10th. If someone, Rachman Litzlan, eats on the 9th and eats on the 10th, I don't think they get the credit for being misane b'tshi. And I should mention, by the way, now I realize as we're reading this, we actually saw this Gemara very recently in the Shnayim Mikvei HaTargum on Daf Ches Amud Beis in Brachos, because there one of the Amoraim wanted to wait till Erev Yom Kippur he wanted to do all of his Shnayim Mikvei HaTargum on Erev Yom Kippur. And he was told, 1 second, you can't do that Erev Yom Kippur. You'll spend the whole day doing it. You won't eat and drink on Erev Yom Kippur. And it's a mitzvah to have a suit on Erev Yom Kippur. Okay, so this is... The Gemara makes reference here to the idea that there's a mitzvah eating on Erev Yom Kippur. That is one of the minhagim. In fact, I think it was, I don't know if it's the Rambam explicitly or the Rav's explanation of the Rambam, understood that Yom Kippur, just like Shabbos and Yom Tov, has a mitzvah of kavod v'oneg. Kvod Shabbos and kvod Yom Tov and kvod Yom HaKippurim is putting on nice clothing. You put on big day Shabbos, big day Yom Tov. But oneg is achil and shtia. So the idea that, again, I don't know if it's explicit in the Rambam, but the Rav had this idea that the mitzvah of Oneg on Yom HaKippurim, we do the day before. And as on Shabbos and Yom Tov, you actually can eat on the day. Yom Kippur, you can. So in order to be Mekayim in the mitzvah of Oneg, so then you actually do it the day before. And it's not as crazy as that sounds. It's not actually so crazy, because it appears that the position of the Rif, I believe, in Arvei Pesachim is that if you eat on Erev Shabbos, you eat a meal. It's not Shabbos. You weren't mekabel Shabbos, and then sunset comes. So the halacha is that you're pores mapa mekadesh. You cover the food on the table. You make kiddush, and if you don't want to eat anymore, according to the Rif, it's not a problem. You just bench and you're done. What happened to Suda Shabbos? The answer is you entered Shabbos having just eaten, and you mekayim the mitzvah of oneg Shabbos for the first Suda without achil and shtia, even though it didn't actually take place on Shabbos. So it could be that on Yom Kippur, this is the mitzvah on it. But whatever it is, there is a mitzvah of eating on Erev Yom HaKippur. Okay, so the Gemara Pesachim adds one interesting wrinkle to this, which is the following. There is a machlokes Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua on Sukkot is coming up. So what do you do on Sukkot? All right, you're off from work. So what is the Seder Hayom? So the Gemara in Beitza cites a machlokas, it's also cited here in Pesachim, between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua, how you divide up a day of Yom Tov. Rabbi Yoshua was of the opinion, based upon two psukim, that one speaks about Atzeres Lashem Elokecha, and one speaks Atzeres Tielochem, that Rabbi Yoshua was of the opinion that it has to be Lashem and it has to be Lochem. The day has to be partially for God, partially for you. So we say, Chalkeu, Chetzio Lashem, V'chetzio Lochem. So you spend half the day, we hope, I don't know if the half is an exact thing, but it means part of the day, davening, learning Torah, singing Zmiros, and then you spend the other half of the day having a good job. Enjoying delicious food and drinking, and that's what you do for the rest of the day. Rabbi Eliezer was of the opinion that it's either kula l'Hashem or kula l'Hashem. None of this compromise, none of this moderation. You either learn and engage in Torah all day, it's not clear what you ate at all, or you party all day. You got to do one or the other. You can't be a mule, or that's a guru. You got to be the horse, or you have to be a donkey. You can't be half and half. It doesn't work that way. It's a kelayim. Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. So the Gemara here says in Pesachim that in light of that spirit, that there are 3 days of the year that require always. Even Rabbi Eliezer's moda, you have to have part of the day be lachem. Part of the day you have to have enjoyment. And it's in that vein, it says, Mar Ravina, kula shata havayasa b'tanisa. Mar Bred Ravina, any day of the year, if he had, let's say, not that he fasted every day, but let's say he had a reason to fast. He had a bad dream. So he wanted to fast the tainis halom. Any day of the year, he would have been yoshei b'tainis. That means Shabbos and Yom Tov, with the exception of 3 days. Lebar me atzarta, with the exception of Shavuos, where you must have Chetzio Lacham, you have to have Oneg. Purya, Purim, and Umala Yom de Kippurim, and Erev Yom. Atzeres is Yom Shinit Ebot Torah, because of the day the Torah was given. That's probably the greatest day of joy for Klal Yisrael, the greatest gift we got from God. So it would be totally inappropriate to fast. Purya, because it says you may mishta v'simcha. It says that explicitly. A mishta. You have to have a party, right? By the chagim in the Torah, I guess it doesn't say you have to have a party. It says you should be happy, but people can be happy in different ways. And male yoma de kippure, on Erev Yom Kippur, he would not fast even a tiny schalom. The tani chia barab midifti v'ini semes nafsho sechem b'sishala chodesh v'chi b'sishta misan v'alo b'siri misan, and that's the Gemara we read. So apparently this is taken really seriously. It sounds like it's a din d'oraisa, that you're not allowed to fast on Erev Yom Kippur, that you have to eat and drink on Erev Yom Kippur. It's almost as if it's part of the mitzvah of Yom Kippur. Okay, one other interesting source in this, it's not something that affects us so much, but the Gemara speaks about the following concern, which is the Torah prohibits shechting a mother animal and its offspring on the same day. We're going to read it the next Shabbos and next Sunday. We're going to read Shar Chesev Oez Ki Valeid, and the next pasuk is Vishar Oseh Oso V'Yespino Lo Sishchatu B'Yom Echad. You're not allowed to shecht a shor or se and its offspring on the same day. So here's the question that the Gemara grapples with, which is, what happens if you're selling stuff to people? You're an animal distributor, and you sell the mother for shechita, and you sell the blood for shechita. So when you sell an animal, do you have to make an assumption of when the buyer is going to shecht it? So generally speaking, the answer is no. You buy a mother cow for me, a mother sheep for me, I don't have to worry that you're going to shecht it the same day as I, or if I sell the vlad, I sell the offspring to someone else. The statistical probability is sufficiently low that we're not concerned about it. We don't worry that somebody is in California and shechts the mother and somebody's in Nebraska and shechts the vlad. We're just not concerned about that. Could it happen? Yeah, that's God's problem, not our problem. However, if you are selling the animals at a particular time where it is likely you know when the person's going to shecht it and you know that you're setting up a conflict, then you have to tell the person, ima macharti lishchot, bita macharti lishchot. You have to tell them that I just sold the mother or I just sold the vlad. But it's specific times, and it's the Gemara of Avodah Zarah that I alluded to earlier. The Gemara of Avodah Zarah, I'll just read it to you, says it's quoting a Mishnah. I think the Mishnah is from Chulin or Bechoros. The Arba Prakim Bashana Hamocher Behima Lachaveiro Tzorech Laudio. Four times of the year, you sell an animal to someone else. You have to tell them, I sold the mother, I sold the offspring. The Eluhain Erev Yom Tov Acharon Shochah. The day Erev Shmini Atzeres, so Shana Rabba, Erev Yom Tov Arishon Shel Pesach, the day before Pesach, the Erev Atzeres, the day before Shavuos, the Erev Rosh Hashanah, and Erev Rosh Hashanah. Apparently, these were days where there was a huge amount, you knew when the person was going to shecht it. And then the Gemara says, Uchedibre Rab Yosei HaGalili, Af Erev Yom HaKippur in Megalim. Even in the Galil, apparently in the Galilee, Erev Yom Kippur was a big party time. You know, there they went all out, and therefore you have to warn the person. Okay, so this is the first of the minhagim of Erev Yom Kippur, a minhag I think everybody likes. Most people are mekayim, they fulfill it with gusto, of having a nice meal on Erev Yom HaKippur. So that might be the one minhag of Erev Yom Kippur, which clearly is a daraisa. The second one that I wanted to look at is an interesting one, which most people are not doing this year. We have a suggested substitute, is the minhag of going to the mikveh on Erev Yom Kippur. And the origin of the minhag is not entirely clear. We'll talk about it as we go through the sources. But the bottom line is that there are a lot of frum Jews who have this practice. It's a practice that's recorded in Shulchan Aruch. Interestingly enough, when it comes to Rosh Hashanah, I don't know exactly what the source is. The Rama mentions it. The Mechaber does not mention going to the mikveh on Erev Rosh Hashanah. It's clear it's going on before the Rama. The Maharil, whose early 15th century makes reference to the fact. We may see that source later. He makes reference in passing. But the only place, the place that the Mechaber quotes it, is actually on Erev Yom Kippur, Erev Yom Kippur, that you should go to the Mikvah. There are really three questions that are involved here. Number one, on a conceptual level, what is the purpose of going to the Mikvah? And then number two and three, as an outgrowth of that, might have an impact. What is the actual requirement of mikveh there? Because some of you, we're not there yet in Maseches Brachos, we'll get there in the third parak, God willing, hopefully next year. But the Gemara speaks about the Takan of Ezra, that a Balkeri has to go to the mikveh. A man man who's had a seminal emission has to go to the mikveh before he makes brachos, before he reads Kriyashma, before he davens. We're not, Takanas Ezra, as mostly assume, has lapsed. However, within the Takan of Ezra, sometimes you have to go to the mikveh, but sometimes you were allowed to pour Tishah Kabin upon yourself. The Chevra Kadisha, I see Isaac. I knew Isaac's head was going to pop up and he was going to start nodding when he heard the Tishah Kabin, which is what they do in a Tara. But they sometimes put the, can they, they'll put the mace in the mikveh, right, if they can. Is that right?
You're muted, Isaac. Rav Moshe Feinstein came out of a tshuva many years ago that it's more kavod hames to pour mikveh water on the mace than putting mace in the water, because the body floats and you got to push it down. So depending what we do, but for the most part, in both places, Riverside, the places we do taharas, we basically pour the mikveh water over the mace.
Okay, so and if that's the Tishah Kabin. So Tishah Kabin is, I think, the sixth Kabin I saw, so it's about 1.5/40, whatever that is. It's about, I don't know, the math is failing me at the moment, but it's probably something like 4% of mikveh water, of a minimum size mikveh, that if a person in certain circumstances about carry could rely upon Tishah Kabin. So one question within the Tefillah and Erev Yom Kippur is, can you rely upon Tishah Kabin or not? Which is what Rabbanim are telling people the minute they go to the mikveh, generally speaking. If someone asked me, I would tell them they have two choices. They either find a place in the Hudson River they can be tovel, or you rely upon Tishah Kabin. Pouring oneself Tishah Kabin, which you could probably do in the shower. I don't know how long you have to shower for that, but take a nice shower on Erev Yom Kippurim in lieu of the Tefillah, since we're not opening up the mikvahs to men. For this tefillah, because the tefillah is really only a minog. It's not ma'akev anything. So that's one question. The second question, which may or may not be dependent upon it, is what time of day are you supposed to do it? So that is the minog. So we're going to now explore the minog of going to the mikvah on Erev Yom Kippur. Interestingly enough, theoretically, today I think only men go to the mikvah on Erev Yom Kippur. I'm not aware of any practice of women going, but you'll see from a reference in the Rishonim, in the medieval period, it seems all men, women, and children all went to the mikveh on Erev Yom Kippur. But there is another very interesting minhag, which I know very little about. It's referenced by the Mechaber, and there's one reference, I think, in the Ma'aril to it, of actually giving Malkus on Erev Yom Kippur. It sounds like what people would do. You know, today we do Hataras, and some people, a lot of people do Hataras Nedarim, right? So people take turns. Three people sit down, a whole bunch of people recite the long paragraph in front of them. They respond, the other people respond. Then they switch places. So apparently there was a practice. I've never seen this done. I haven't heard it being done as much as that, but I'm willing to bet you if you go to Me'er Sharim or places like that, or B'nai Brak, I bet you the minhag still exists, where people take turns giving each other malkos. I don't know the exact nature of malkos. I will speculate here what the purpose of the malkos actually is. I mean, aside from if you have a score to settle with someone, you hit them a little extra hard. But I think I'm guessing that the minhag is actually as follows. There was a major controversy in the 16th century with the Chiddush HaSmicha, with restarting the Smicha. There was a passage in the Rambam in the Perush HaMishnayis and Bechoros where he says he thinks that you can reinvent the Smicha. Our Smicha, our real Smicha, you know, the chain of ordination from Moshe Rabbeinu to Yeshua down through the generations, which ceased to continue some point during the 4th, 5th, 6th century in Eretz Yisrael. So the Rambam thought that if all the Chachmei Yisrael got together, all the sages of the Jewish people, however you define it, that's part of the problem, and they decided to reinstitute the Smicha, they could restart it. So in the 16th century, in Sfat, a group of disciples of the Maribe Rav, including Rav Yosef Karo, the author subsequently of the Beis Yosef and Shulchan Aruch, they gave the Maribe Rav Smicha, and then he gave his own Talmidim Smicha. Now, needless to say, this may not surprise you, and it may be even correct, Rav Levi Ibn Chabib, who was the chief rabbi of Jerusalem, was not very happy because the Jerusalem rabbi hadn't really been consulted. And he didn't think that it qualified as all the Chachmei Yisrael. He's probably right. And this created a great controversy of Smicha. And eventually the Smicha died out. I think like after the initial Smicha, one person gave a Talmud his Smicha, and that was about it. And then that Smicha ceased to be. Why were they so interested and desperate to do Smicha? So at least according to what I was taught, I think Rav Shachter mentioned this, I don't know what the source is they wanted to reinstitute Smicha so they could give Malkus. No, this was not the people, the goons who want to throw rocks at buses driving on roads on Shabbos, but rather they actually had a noble purpose, which is, the halacha is that there's at least a sheet in the Gemara, I think we paskin this way, for whatever it means, is kol chai bekresos shelaku. Anybody who violated an avera for which you chai kares and gets malkos, the malkos exempts you from the kares. And this was the time, really, in the decades right after the mass conversions in Spain, the Muranos. And when Muranos escaped, or conversos, whatever the appropriate term is, escaped, and they were choser b'tshuva, so they had accepted Christianity, even under duress, and there was concerns about them being chayiv kares. So they wanted malkos to exempt themselves from the kares. So that was the idea of reinstituting the smicha, because you don't need a Sanhedrin, I think, in the Lishkas HaGozis to give the death penalty you do, not to give malkos. So they wanted to reinstitute the smicha so you could give real malkos, not just be beating somebody up, to exempt them from the punishment of kares. And I suspect that is sort of imitating that, not the full thing, is a little bit the idea in Erev Yom Kippur, is that if you get malkos, it helps sort of expunge your record. Okay, so the malkos part, I have never seen done. I don't want to tell you it doesn't exist in some circles, but I've never actually heard of it actually being done.
In Eastern Europe, Rabbi, I saw it being done. My father took me when I was a little boy up to the Spinker Rebbe in Crown Heights, and there was an audience, and I saw it being done. And they had a special flat, it was a flat board. And it was symbolic. They didn't hit the Rebbe hard, but I've seen it done.
Oh, come on. That takes all the fun out of it. What were the points? No. He just did it for the Rebbe. Okay.
Because the Rebbe didn't sin much, so there wasn't any, there's no reason to hit it hard.
Okay.
My grandfather told me they did it in Eastern Europe. Eastern Europe, that? They did. My grandfather told me in the Ukraine, yeah, they did do it. Erev Pesach. Erev Yom Kippur.
Okay. This is a minhag, I think given the world we live in, it's probably better that it has basically disappeared.
I have done. I saw Asara Harigo Malchus. The four ways.
That would be fun, Isaac. Yeah.
That'd be fun. No, mixing it up. The four ways of chet moves before a tahara. I have participated where they actually throw little rocks and they put a scarf around the neck. So they symbolically, if you sin, you're doing, you're getting all of the Mises Bezen.
Wow, on the mace.
On the mace, yeah.
Wow. The only problem with that is if he's from the Haruge Basin, you can't bury him in the same cemetery. But I'll leave that to tell aside. Okay.
I saw this with the when I participated a day with the Natura Carta Hevra tradition, Yerushalayim.
Oh boy.
Okay. Fine. So let's talk about tefillah. Malkus is probably more fun, but tefillah is a little more practical, even if not this year. So the question is, what would the source be? And the only source in the Gemara that theoretically could have been applied, although it's highly, highly, highly questionable in the context of Yom Kippur, is the Gemara Rosh Hashanah, which is Va'amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Chayv Adol Mataris Atzma Beregem, Shenemar Uvenivlasam Lo Sigao. In the Parsha, in the section of Ma'acholos Asuros, the prohibited foods, in Parsha Shemini, the Torah, speaking about the things that you can't eat, and speaking about the things that make you tame, there is a line that says, Uvin nevlasam lo sigao. You can't eat them. And uvin nevlasam lo sigao. You can't touch their carcass. Now, the question is, why not? Where do we ever derive the prohibition of touching the carcass of an animal? As you'll see in a moment, Kohanim are not allowed to defile themselves to an Adam meis, to a person who's died. There's no prohibition in becoming Tameh. If you become Tameh, you can't eat truma for your kohen. You can't eat kachem, period, even if it were your carbon, and it's the kind of carbon you're allowed to eat. You can't enter the Beis HaMikdash, right? There are lots of things that you can't do if you're tameh, but there's no prohibition per se of becoming tameh. So the Gemara says, uven nivlasam lo siga'u, refers to Shas HaRegel. On Shas HaRegel, you're going to go to Yerushalayim. You're going to go into the Beis HaMikdash for Re'i Asponim Ba'azara, to show your face. In the Azara, you'll probably bring Karbanos as well, and Olas Re'ia, and Shalmei Chagiga. So you can't be Tameh when you do that. Now, if that's what the Drasha is, and it's so it would seem to be here, that doesn't apply to Yom Kippur, because Yom Kippur is not a regal in that sense. There's no Aliyah L'regal on Yom Kippur. Sukkos, yeah, but not on Yom Kippur, and certainly not Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara continues, Tanya Nami Hachi, Uvin Nevlasam Lo Sigao, Yachu Yehu Yisrael, Musar Namagan Aveila. You might think that actually you're not allowed to touch the veil of an animal. Tamalomar emorla konim b'nei aron musharim b'nei yisraelim musharim. The prohibition of becoming tameh applies only to kohanim, and not to Yisrael. and more. V'alo dvarim kal v'chomer umat tuma chamura kohanim musarim yisraelim einu musarim tuma kala lo kol shekein. If kohanim, if tuma chamura, touching a dead body, a kohen is not allowed to, but a yisrael is, certainly an avela. You touch a dead body, you require sprinkling of the ashes and water of the paraduma, water with the ashes of the paraduma, in order to purify yourself on the third and seventh day, and it requires at least 7 days to become tahar. You touch the nevela of a cow, you touch the carcass of a cow, you go to the mikvah, sundown comes, and you tahar. So if Tumas Mace, only a kohen is prohibited, how much more so that a Yisrael, who's allowed to be Metami Lameish, should be allowed to touch a nevela? Ella matama lomar uvenivlasam lo sigau biregel. And when it comes to the regel, so then you have to prepare yourself properly. And incidentally, if a kohen is not slated to do avoda, he's also allowed to touch nevela. And there's no prohibition for kohen either. Okay, so this, in theory, there is an idea of a chayal ad notar to a regel. But it doesn't apply Bisman Hazeh, because we're not going to the Beis HaMikdash. It wouldn't apply to Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. But the Rush writes, at the end of the eighth parak of Yoma, in fact, there's a lot of the material that we know about Yom Kippur, a lot of the Minhagim of Yom Kippur that are not in the Gemara, you will find collected in the Rush at the end of the eighth chapter of Yoma, the eighth and final chapter. The Rush writes as following: V'nagu litbol be'erev Yom HaKippurim. The minhag is to be tov on erev Yom Kippur. The Amar Rav Amram. This is source number 4. Tov al adam b'sheva sha'os u'mispalo tefila samincha. Rav Amram Gon, probably 9th century, says, or 10th century, probably 9th century. Rav Amram Gon says that you should go at 7 hours, and then you daven mincha. I mean, it sounds like you're going after Chatzos before you daven mincha. The Amar of Sadia Gon said, "Ba'aliyaso mi litbol mivarech ala tefila." So Sadia Gon here says something very interesting. It's a major controversy. He says that after you do the tefila, you make a bracha. So we're going to see many people you don't make a bracha. We'll explain why. But what's more interesting about Sadia Gon's position is when you make the bracha. There is a machlokas about this. The Gemara in the first parak of Pesachim says that that all mitzvos, you make the bracha before you do the mitzvah, with the exception of tevila. Because before the person does the tevila, he's not roy to make the bracha. The question is, why not? So the Gaonim say this only applies to one kind of immersion, one kind of tevila, and that's a ger. And the reason is simple, because before a ger immerses in the mikvah, the ger can say, Asher kedushanu mitzvah tzivon ala tevila. In that case, the ger isn't roy to make the bracha. He's not mitzvah until after he's gone to the mikvah. He comes up. Now he can make the bracha. But all other tameim, the Gaonim assume, like you see in Rav Sadia Gon here, you make the bracha. I take that back. He isn't doing it that way. He's doing it. He's the shita that says that all the time you have to do the tefillah before the bracha. But there are those who disagree and say no, that that's limited actually to ger. So the Rush writes, Rav Sadia Gon's position about making a bracha, not about the order. Rav Sadia Gon's position is not correct. Shalomatsinu b'hashas remez l'tfila zo. There's no hint anywhere in Shas about the tfila on Erev Yom Kippur. And ve'in la yisod neviim v'lo minog neviim. It's not even based upon, you know, an early practice of the neviim v'lo adifa me'arava da amar le chavit v'lo barich chasavar minog neviim hu. Right, in come Sukkos, Hoshana Rabbah, we don't make a bracha on the mitzvah Rabbah. The reason we don't is because it's a minhag neviim and there's no bracha on such a thing. And tefillah on Erev Yom Kippur isn't even that. The imishum the Amar Rabbi Yitzchak chayvad l'taratz b'meregel. Even if you want to argue based upon Rabbi Yitzchak's din, hain l'taratz b'mikol tomos. If you want to be mekayim that, you have to be metar yourself from all your tumah. In other words, almost everybody in this shiur right now is Tameh Meis, right? Isaac for sure. That we know with absolute certainty. But most of the rest of us, and probably even the Kohanim, are Tameh Meis. So you can go to the mikvah 1,000 times, 1,000 days in a row, and you're still going to be Tameh exactly the way you before. You're going to be an Avatoma. Why? Because in order to get rid of Tumas Meis, when you've touched a Meis or been in the same tent, under the same roof as a Meis, you need the sprinkling of the waters mixed with the ashes of the paraduma on the third and seventh days. And in the absence of that, nothing is good. And therefore, Vahidana Elanu Taros, says the Rosh, today we don't have Taros and we don't have Efer Paraduma either. Chaven Shein Bale Kerian told them Kala Shana Kula. The only mitzvah tefillah that might be left is Takanas Ezra, that a Balkari, a man who's experienced the seminal mission, has to go to the mikvah before reciting Dvarim Shiviktucha, reciting brachos. Therefore, since we don't do that all year, right? Sheim Bali Kerim Tovum Kalashana Kula, when Minag is, we don't, Takanas Ezra is no law in force. Gam in Chova Latvila Zel, there's no obligation on Erev Yom Kippur either. The Ein Levare Chalaha. So the Rosh says the reason for the minhag is tefillas balkari because of Yom Kippur, but it's not, you're not mechuyev to do so. You're not obligated to do so, strictly speaking. Therefore, you don't make a bracha. Okay. So the Rosh cites the minhag from the Gaon through the tefillah. He rejects the element of making the bracha. And the way he quotes it, at least the timing seems to be after chatzos before you daven mincha. Okay, now I wanted to actually.
A question, but the Gemara is not talking about Tumas Mace, it's talking about Tumas Tevela, right? You don't need Paraduma for that.
No. The point is, the Matar Atzmo Beregel, a person for the Regel has to be Matar him or herself, has to be Matar him or herself. But any kind of Tuma will interfere with that process. So even nevela, even normally, if let's say a Kohen, he can't touch a mace, but he touch a nevela any other day of the year. But when it comes to regel, because Kohanim and Yisraelim are required to be mitar atzman beregel, you can't touch any tumah, even tumas nevela. So the Gemara derives it from the pasuk uven nevela samlo sigo, but the principle that it's deriving is that chayiv on the mitar atzma regel, and mitar atzma to accomplish its purpose, you have to be tahar. So it's not just nevela, but it's even nevela. Is that?
Yeah, I see.
In other words, you're right from the Gemara itself in context. You could have argued it's a prohibition specifically on nevela, but the derivation or the law derived by Rabbi Yitzchak is that that's just one manifestation of tuma, even a lesser form of tuma, and one would argue kavachomer, a more severe form of tuma.
Rabbi, where does the concept of tuma hitri b'tzuber come in? What role does it play in all of this?
Nothing. And Tumah Hutra B'tzibur is a principle in the Beis HaMikdash, really. In the Beis HaMikdash, if there were no Kohanim who were Tahorim, who could do the Avodah, so then Tumayim do the Avodah of Karbanos Tzibur and things that have a fixed time, not Karbanos Yachid.
It doesn't apply. Interesting. Okay.
And as it's not the Tumah, the principle the Gemara has in the first parak in Yoma and elsewhere of Tumah Hutra B'tzibur is that when you don't have enough people, it's learned from Pesach Sheni. I mean, that's the sort of the starting point of it. It's not, maybe not be the source. The idea, that's the case where Robat Tzibur Tmeim, Tmei Mace, and we say, therefore, everybody just brings the carbon betum on Pesach Rishon. They're not, a Tzibur is not needed for Pesach Sheni. But there's a separate principle. The Gemara Davav Dav Zayin has a long discussion in the first parak in Yoma about under what circumstances we say Tumah Hutra B'chui B'tzibur, Tumah D'chui B'tzibur. But what is clear is that if there are no Kohanim Tahorim who can do the Avodah, let's say, of the Tamid, of the fixed Karbanos, then a Kohen whose Tamid does the Avodah. Now, there are sort of three positions in terms of the water requirement for Tefillin Erev Yom Kippur. The first is found in the Sefer Tashbetz, and I have a couple of very short passages here from it. The Tashbetz was one of five major students of the Maharam. There are actually two Tashbetzes. There's a later Tashbetz who's much more famous. I think Rav Shimon ben Semach, which one is that? Duran? Yes, I think that's the later famous one who's probably a Svardi. And this Tashbetz, I believe, it was a Talmud of the Maharam Rutenberg. He was most certainly an Ashkenazi. He's one of five major Talmudim of the Maharam Rutenberg, the Rush, the Mordechai, the author of the Hagos Maimonios, the Shari Dura and the Rabbi Yitzchak Duren and the Tashbetz, the person who wrote the Tashbetz Katan. So he writes here, Uva Erev Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah Voshana Rab Shehubal Bris. Under these circumstances, or here it's a little more than we have. You have not only Rosh Hashanah Kippur, but even on Hoshana Rabbah, and when he was, I guess, a Sandak. Maharam Zal Shofech Al Rosho Tisha Kabin Maim. The Maharami Rutenberg would pour 9 kabin of water on his head. Shehem Reshud Vabbeitzin, 216 Beitzin, Bimakum Tvila, in lieu of Tvila, Ki Osa Tvila, Eina Ki Mishvil Tara, Velo Bishvil Chova. there's no real obligation, strictly speaking, to do tefillah at any of these times. Therefore, the Maharam Mewurtemberg felt that Tisha B'Av was sufficient. Interestingly enough, if you read the Ramah in Shulchan Aruch, which we will in a few minutes, the Rashma paskins that way. The Ramah paskins that there's no need to go to the mikveh, Tisha B'Av suffices. The Mishnah Berurah and the Acharim say, following a different opinion, as we'll read in a moment, only if you have no choice, only b'shas hadchak. This year, certainly the Mishnah Berurah agrees, is a shas hadchak. But the Tashbates, the Maharam Mewurtemberg's practice, it would appear, is that he held Tisha B'Av was 100% l'chatchila to do. There was no need to actually go to the mikveh. The next passage in the Tashbates, the very next sif, utfila b'yom kippurim einatzarach levarach l'shenobo b'shvil tara, because it's not really coming b'shvil tara, it's only because of let's say tumas keri, which we hold is not obligatory, you don't make a bracha. But Rabbi Yitzchak Perush, I don't know who this Rabbi Yitzchak is, but maybe the Balatosos Perush hamavarech ala tefila ergam kippur marei ze bracha levatala. If you make a bracha on your tefila, then it's a bracha levatala. Not a good way to prepare for Yom Kippur. And then the last point, which is a few even later in the Tashbates, the adam yochol lilkos be'erav yom kippur masai sheyirtze rak sheyakodem alayla. You're allowed to get your malchus on Erev Yom Kippur any time of day you want, as long as you do it before nightfall. I assume that's for a couple of reasons. Firstly, you want to do it before Yom Kippur. Secondly, if you give a person malchus, you're likely to cause bruising. Maybe not the way the Spinker Rav got paddled. But if you were to give malchus of any kind of real variety, you'd have bruising, and that would be a malacha on Yom Kippur. Okay. Now, so that's the first shita. In the other extreme, we have the position of the Ma'aril, which is a fascinating, fascinating position. So the Ma'aril, I believe, Rav Yaakov Leib Molin, in the Minhagim, these are citations of him. I don't know that I'm not sure that he wrote this exactly, because they quote him that Amar Mari Segal. But the Ma'aril, who's early 15th century Germany, writes the following, or it's written the following: Tfilas Erev Yom Kippur. Amar Mari Segal, Yesh Poskin Litbal Achar Suda Mafsekes Po'erev. There are those who say that it is best to go to the mikveh after you eat the Suda Mafsekes. Ki Ikar HaTfila Mishum Tshuvahui. The primary purpose of Tfila on Erev Yom Kippur, and he'll say, I think later, Erev Rosh Hashanah, is a process of Tshuva. Now, what does that mean? What's the Tshuva? You'll see in a second. So, since it's primarily about Tshuva, the closer it is to actually Yom Kippur is better. Amar Mari Segal, the Niver Lelahavi Raya, the Mishum Tshuvahi. What's the proof of the tefillah that we do on Erev Yom Kippur is about Tshuva, it's not about Tara. The Hanoa Gimel is Litpol Anashim Anashim Narim Mabasulas Barab Mitzvah Bas Mitzvah. Everybody, all the young, the old, the medium aged, all the everybody would do tefillah, men and women. I'm not sure I understand the second half, but men at least will go to the mikveh because of Tomas Keri, because of the seminal emissions. I'm going to leave out the next three words, then we'll go into what he's talking about here. Why did they go to the mikveh? It's all about tshuva. He quotes a Yerushalmi. There was a young woman who was taken captive by the non-Jews. When they ransomed her, when she was in captivity, she had to eat treif food. So as part of the process of tshuva, even though it was permissible, they put her in the mikveh. This is an unbelievable statement. Now, it's a little strange. What tshuva is a ger doing? You're going to say that the ger is doing tshuva because he should have come to convert earlier and he only came to convert now? That doesn't make sense. You're not being a ger katan. The ger katan certainly hasn't done anything. I think what it means is that sin leaves a stain. Sin leaves a stain and you use a mikveh to wipe it away. It's like the last Mishnah in Yoma. We say Ashreichem Yisrael, lifnei atem mitarim li mitar eschem, and we say Avinu Shevashemayim, and we say that Kodesh Baruch Hu is a mikveh tara for Klal Yisrael. So in that sense, that's about tshuva. It's about kapara. It's not about tuma. So the Ma'aril says that's what the tefillah in Erev Yom Kippur is about. And a ger who's coming to convert, he's in effect purifying himself from his previous behaviors. The chayvan the tefillah zomishum tshuva he. Gamim Tavah be'erev Rosh Hashanah v'lo ra'ashem kariyach hakach lo nitma. Mikol makom yaser v'yitbol ha'idana l'tshuva. So the Maharil says, let's say you go to the mikvah of Yom Kippur, and a man in between, he doesn't have sex in between, he doesn't have a seminal mission. He'll say, I don't need to go to the mikvah of Yom Kippur because I went to Rosh Hashanah. The answer is no, because it's about tshuva. Mikol makom yaser v'yitbol ha'idana l'tar l'tshuva. And then he says, "V'yesh deos notim sheish litbo kodem mincha that you should do tefillah before mincha v'cheinogim." And that is the minna. Kidei she tefillas mincha v'gam vidui te'ase b'tara v'nikias. The first tefillah of Yom Kippur actually is erev Yom Kippur, which is the vidui by mincha. And we do the vidui by mincha. We don't do it in the chazar shashatz. There's no place to do it. But the individual later this afternoon when you daven mincha. After you finish your Shemona Esrei, you say Yul Ratzon Refi, and then you're going to start with Elokai Shalom Atzav. Not that it's going to start Elokeinu Kevo Seinu. You're going to start with the Vidui. So since that's the first tefillah really in relationship of Yom Kippur, the first Vidui, better to go to the mikvah before then. Okay, the Oso Vidui Shekodem Sudam Afsekes Hani Yishum Dachashinim Penchas V'Shalom Yeshikim Misudaso or Yechanik Misudaso V'Yamos Below Vidui Pesha. We're afraid the person will get so drunk they won't do vidui, or they'll choke in the suda and they'll die, and they'll die without having the chance to do vidui. So that's why we do the vidui by mincha. But once you're going to do tefillas Yom Kippurim on erev Yom Kippur, namely mincha, therefore it's appropriate to go to the mikvah before then. He continues, v'yesh mefarshim tefillas erev Yom Kippur mishum tarahi. Now those who argue it's about tara, ked isa b'midrash yisrael nekiim heim kemalachim. So he acknowledges this other practice. Now, the difference between these two opinions already, even though the Maharil doesn't state it, is should Tisha Kaben work at all? If the purpose of the Tvila is Tara, and it's specifically the concern of Tumas Keri, then it makes sense why, under some circumstances, or maybe generally, we might accept Tisha Kaben. Firstly, when Ezra's Takana of Bali Keri having to go to the mikvah was in force, so there were circumstances you could use Tisha Kaben. You could use the 9 Kaben of order. And for us, certainly, who we don't consider Takanas as rebinding, certainly it would seem 9 Kaben should be reasonable. However, if the reason is about tshuva and going to the mikvah, so there's no reason to necessarily think, Tfilas Ger certainly is no good if it's less than 40 sa. There's no reason to think that Tisha Kaben would be sufficient. Then he says, V'yesh noagim, because of this, litbo la'achar mincha samach l'chashecha, you want to push the tzvila as close as you can to Yom Kippur, lest the person somehow accidentally be defiled with Tumas Keri before then, late in the day. But for Amar Mari Segel, Shirame Rabosav Shayutovim, Koda Mincha, Kitapei Rashulel, the Maharil said the minhag of his teachers was to do tzvila before Mincha, not to push it off as close as you can till the evening. And Vahayatovel Gimel Pamim, Beimber of Rosh Hashanah, Beim Kippur, he would go and dip 3 times, both Erev Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. V'chein isa berokeach mishum shenemar mikveh Yisrael shalosh pamim bakra. 3 times in Tanakh, it says mikveh Yisrael. And therefore, you go to the mikveh 3 times then. It's a very odd practice. Women go to the mikveh, at least according to Shulchan Aruch. I don't know what they actually do in the mikveh. You don't go up and down 3 times. You go to the mikveh once. And I real quick, the mikveh go 3 times in Erev Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. V'gam osam she'tov l'mishum tshuva, modim she'tov l'm kodem mincha k'di l'spal b'nekiyas v'tara. Here he repeats the point. So he says that those who believe, which is the Maharil's position, that the tshuva is that the tevila is about tshuva. So still, you can go to you should go as he said earlier before mincha. So when you daven, it will be b'nekiyas v'tara. V'hada ashkachan demaram hayar noheing lishpoch tisha kaben arosho. So he knows the Maharam Rutenberg's minag of using Tisha Kaben, shu sabar atam de mishum tarahi kemo ki kama bali keri and dai lahum bahachi. That's because it's modeled upon Tumas Bal Keri. And afal pi the kaimelan krabi huda ben besera, the bali keri and bismana ze in trichon tfilah. We will learn this gemara in the third parak. Rabbi Huda ben besera said, Takana says is no longer in force, and the minag Yisrael is to pask in that way. Nonetheless, mi komako mishum taras rosh hashanah yom kippurim ba'i. So you need to do it for Erev Rosh Hashanah and Erev Yom Kippur. So that was, but the position of the Maharil himself is that the tevila is because of tshuva, and therefore it requires actually a mikvah. There is an in-between position. The Mari Vail, who was a Talmud of the Maharil, and the Mari Vail writes here, the source number seven, la'achar chatzos tovlim below bracha. So he says he actually makes it after chatzos. You do tefillah without a bracha. Osam ha'tovlim gimel pa'amim minog shtusu. It says those, which is a little odd because it seems to be the practice that is attributed to his Rebbe, but he says the minog of dipping three times is a minog shtus. This I've never seen. You got to be. I certainly hope if you do vidui tachas hamayim, you only do the ashamnus, because if you do the alchets, you may achieve kapara for all your sins in the mikvah. But I don't think anybody else is going to be happy when you drown. So anyway, umishen o yachal litpol kegon shemitzdar yishvoch al rosh tishaka b'mayim dahainu reishu v'abeitzim etc. So the Marivayel quotes what was the practice of the Marivayel Wittenberg. But if you look at the difference between the Marivayel and the Tashbates, for the Tashbates, there's no lachatchila for the Marami Wittenberg of using 40 sa'ah. And the truth is, even for the Maril's interpretation, the Maril understands, he doesn't say that the Marami Wittenberg used 9 kabim because it was hard for him to use 40 sa'ah. He says that the Marami Wittenberg used 9 kabim because it was because of tara, not because of tshuva. The Maril would say to use a mikvah because he holds it's because of tshuva. The Marivayel is kind of neither here nor there. He's acknowledging it's because of Tumas Keri, therefore you can use Tisha Kabim, but he says that's only b'dieved if you can't use Arbaim Sa. Now the truth is, as an independent position, it's logical. In other words, you could argue to reject the Maran Burton and say the following. Tefillah on Erev Yom Kippur is modeled upon Tefillah Ezra. Even if Tefillah Ezra is no longer generally binding, we do it for Erev Hashanah Yom Kippur. And the rule by Tefillah Ezra, as we're going to see in the Gemara, is, it kind of depends, but in some circumstances, a person who's a chole can rely upon Tisha Kabim. We'll see that in some cases, but in the certain cases, you need mem saw. Okay. In Shulchan, a couple of closing notes about this topic, and then we'll just spend a few minutes talking about kaparas. So the Shulchan Aruch writes, Yochol litbol velukos masai sheyirza, rak sheyekodam alayla, ve'enem bevarech ala tefila. So the Mechaber here, interestingly enough, he mixes two things together. The Tashbate said that Yochol Lukos Masai Shiyirtza Rak Shiyekodam Alayla. But the Mechaber has included the Tefillah there. Now, one could have argued, at least based upon the Marivayel, that Tefillah has to be after Chatzos. Because the truth is, if you look at all the opinions of the Rishonim that we have, after Chatzos, nobody has to before Chatzos. Some people wanted you to push the Tefillah as close as you could to the Laila. But the others would say, no, we don't want to do that. They want it only Dafka before Mincha, or before the Sudan of Sekes. That's after Chatzos. So it's not clear where the Mechaber, where the Beis Yosef gets the idea that Tevila really could be all day. Okay, but that is the Minog. The Minog is, I'm sure there's some people mock me to do Tevila after Chatzos, but if you've ever attended Mikvos and ever Shana Yom Kippur, clearly Puk Chazi Mayama Devar, look at the Minog Olam, and lots and lots and lots of people are going to the Mikvah in the morning, early morning, on Erev Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So some of them do it, yes, because they have to go to work, but many others are not going to work, but they just go. They want to take care of the tevila so they can have completed that mitzvah and not worry about it later.
Rabbi Leader.
Yes.
With apologies, I was actually off for about 8 minutes, and so I might have missed this if you hit it already. But if you were Tovel before Rosh Hashanah, what type of event, if any, would obligate you to Tovel again before Yom Kippur, or are they just analytically completely separate, and doing Tefillah before Yom Kippur is sort of its own self? And then, like, it's not a question of like being tahor from certain things or activities, that like you can be Yotze and Rosh Hashanah.
Right, so the Maril addressed that issue, but Lashita so, that he believes that Tefillah is about tshuva, he says even though you went Erev Shana, you have to go to Erev Yom Kippur again. Even though you were not roa keri in between. So normally in a typical circumstance, even if a husband and wife, if a husband did not have sex with his wife in between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, the Maril says you're still supposed to go. If the tefillah is really only about Tomas Keri and you went Erev Rosh Hashanah, then arguably you shouldn't have to go Erev Yom Kippur. I think the minhag is, in this regard, I think minhag is people go to the mikvah in both. But are you, one could have made the argument for the Shita of the Marami Rutenberg that if you went Erev Rosh Hashanah, it would be necessary to Yom Kippur. The more interesting question would be, though, that for the Mechaber, who only quotes the Din of Tzvi by Erev Yom Kippurim, theoretically, you should be able to go the 8th of Tishrei, the 7th of Tishrei, but it seems sort of intuitive that the Tefillah should be in preparation for Yom Kippur, which means it should be on Erev Yom Kippur. If there's only one mitzvah Tefillah, if there's both Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, you could argue, if I went Erev Rosh Hashanah and I didn't do anything in between that was Mechayiv another Tefillah, maybe I shouldn't be obligated. But I think the assumption is that one goes both. whether it's because we are accepting the Mariel's position or even not.
Rabbi, another question. Is Tefillah carry midrabbanan or midiraisa?
Midrabbanan.
Only midrabbanan.
Yes. We'll learn that in the third parak, Divrei Torah, not Mekablan Tumah. So there was a basis for Takanas Ezra, but it was a din derabbanan.
The Piskei Shiurim, I'm sure you know that Sefer Piskei Shiurim, it gives you a little, it was written by a scholar in Israel a couple of years ago. It brings down Rabbi Kanievsky, then Rabbi Auerbach. Okay, not important. Okay. Not important. Okay. Not relevant.
One, by the way, interesting side note about this. There is a practice, I don't want to say a minhag because I don't think it happens terribly often, but in Meshumad, who does tshuva, someone who apostatizes does tshuva, there was a practice to go to the mikveh to makbil them, almost like it was tfilas gerus, which on the one hand makes very little sense because Yisrael, afa pi shechata Yisrael, who even if a Jew apostatizes, we regard the person as still Jewish, and they don't need anything. They have to do tshuva, but they don't need, going to the mikveh doesn't accomplish anything, but that seems to have been a practice. I don't think it's cited in the Shulchan Aruch itself, but in light of the Mariel's comments, it would make perfect sense. If the purpose of Tvilas Ger is somehow a process of tshuva, it's a kal vachomer that a Meshumad, who's doing tshuva, the Ger did not do anything wrong being born non-Jewish. But the Meshumad certainly did do something wrong, and that would necessitate, therefore, some kind of a tvila, at least a minute to do tvila. Okay. The last question I wanted to explore very briefly is a personal favorite, is the question of kaparas. And kaparos might be the most pagan-looking ritual that is left in contemporary Orthodox Judaism, at least that I've seen. I have not spent time, Isaac, giving people arba misas based in, in a tara. I'm sure there are a lot of interesting things that go on, but at least to my eyes that I've ever, I don't know if I'm sure I've even seen it, but I know what goes on. I could see it take place in Tinek, actually. There are some people who do kaparos here. So the minhag of kaparis is a very old minhag. It goes back to the Gaonic period. The Rush writes in the last parak of Yoma, source number 9, Yesh mekom ha-shanagu lishchot erev Yom HaKippurim tarnagol l'chapara. There were places that had the minhag to shech a chicken on erev Yom HaKippurim for the purposes of kapara. V'nimsa davar zeh b'tshuvas ha-gaonim. There is a response from the Gaonim, the Rush writes, that records the practice. U'shesh eltem, that which you asked, sha'anu regilim lishchot erev Yom HaKippurim tarnagol. If it's because you're bringing the animal almost as a carbon in your stead because you deserve the death penalty, so why do they pick a chicken as opposed to a cow or an ox or a sheep? Why did they choose a chicken? So they say there are two possible explanations. It's accessibility. It's easy to get chickens. It's also cheap, relatively speaking. So therefore, that's why they use a chicken. The odesh b'mekomenu ashirim she'osan tmura elim v'ikar balei karnayim d'mos elosh d'shayitza kabinu. There are some wealthy people, the Gaonim record, that actually use a real animal, particularly things that would have horns like a ram to remind us or to remind God of the ram of Isaac. Lefikach lo davar kavahu. Maybe it doesn't have to be a chicken. Chicken was just readily available. The Ot Shamanu Me'achachamim HaKadmonim, we heard from the sages of yesteryear, another reason, Sh'afo Pisha Behema Dameh Yukarim, even though an animal is more valuable, it's more expensive, which you think it's a greater mitzvah, Yosei Me'a Tarnagol, Afo Pikein Tarnagol Mufchar Lafi Shishmo Gever. No, because a Tarnagol is called a Gever, Kidamrinan Mai Kriyas HaGever Amar Rav Kara Gavra. Kriyas HaGever, which refers to the earliest when daybreak, so Rav said Kriyas HaGever is when some person announces or something, the bugler. The Bei Rav Shila Amri Kara Tarnagola. Kriyas HaGever means when the chicken, the roosters crow. Batanya Kavase de Rav Shila Hayotze Kodem Kriyas HaGever Dama Barosho. Someone who goes out before the roosters that early in the morning, so it's a dangerous thing to do. The Chayvan Shishmo Gever. Tmura, gever begever, tzvei mani mahanach male. The best thing to do is if you wanna pull off a substitute, like if you're gonna take a final exam and you wanna cheat. Well, if you have an identical twin who's much smarter than you, it's something you might be able to pull off. I think there's some MTA legends like that. They're probably not true, but even if they never happened, they're probably true. But if you wanna pull off a cheating scam like that, so you need to find somebody who looks like you a little bit, right? If you're me and you pull in, you know, Shaquille O'Neal as my substitute, I think it's kind of stand out that, you know, he's a little bigger than I am. We don't really look alike. So the bottom line is you better get someone who looks a little like you, who is a little like you. Now, I don't like to think that any of us look like chickens, but we're called Gever. The men are at least called Gvarim, but it's assumed to apply to women as well. And Tarnagol is also called a Gever. So you put a Gever in place of a Gever. You stick somebody, if that's the minnow, you should probably stick a big label on your chicken, a little tag around the neck that says Gever. Yes. So in case any of the Malachim handling this, they need to know, this is the Gever. So that's what the second reason that's offered. I like the first reason better, but I think it to be more likely. I suspect the second one is after the fact. And then he says, V'kach regilim kan, ochei shaliach tarnagol, u'meiniach yada rosh tarnagol. He holds the shaliach, I guess whoever's going to do the shechita, holds the tarnagol, and he puts his hand on the tarnagol as if he's doing, it's almost as if he's doing smicha. V'notlo u'meiniach yada rosh ha-meskaper. Then he takes his hand, then he puts it on the head of the person who's receiving the kapara. V'omer, zeh tachazeh. This is in lieu of the other one. This is being redeemed on the other one. And then it looks like he does it again. But Omer, and he starts to recite Psukim, Bnei Adam, etc., etc. And then finally, if you skip to the next page, you end with Nefesh Tachas Nefesh. The Osek Kaseidar Azer Shalosh Pamin. The Acher Kach Meneach Yadol Rosh HaTarnago, Tarnas Smicha. Now he does a smicha on the tarnagol, which is bizarre because in the mikdash, when you bring a korban, you normally do smicha, but not if it's a bird. As you can imagine, real smicha means to lean with all your weight on the head of the animal, and is b'shtei yada b'chol kocho, as the Gemara Chagiga says. If you do that to the chicken, you won't be shechting the chicken and giving it to the anim. You'll be twirling a dead chicken over your head. So you do fake smicha, v'shoch to la'altar. You're not supposed to have a hefsek between smicha and shchita. And the people habitually give this to poor people to be a kapara. If you ask me, that's the only good part of kaparas. Fine. We're not going to go into they would throw the chicken innards on the roof, whatever, to give it to the birds, whatever the reason was. Okay. So this is the practice that the Rosh cites from the Gaonim. Kaparas is a very, very, very old practice. The Rashba in Barcelona was asked about this question. This is the mid-13th century. And remember, by the way, the Rush and many others had fled from Germany to Spain. The Rush was a little younger than Rashba. I think they know each other well at this point. I don't know. The Rush quotes the Rashba a number of places, by name even maybe in his works. I don't remember if the Rashba ever quotes the Rush by name. But the Rashba says the following. L'chacham Rabbi Yaakov Bar Machir. It was a particular chacham. Kasav Mar. The person who asked the Rashba the Shaila said, "Ki ra'isa ma'ase hishavti ani be'ina kapara she'oslam le'arbe amakipurim v'sha'asarti ani." You saw my response. I don't know if we have this response, but you saw my tshuva that I said you're not allowed to do kaparas. V'hena acha, you appreciated the tshuva very much. V'ata mosif od lomar shekarav lomar sheshchita psula. You want to argue further? Not only is it us to do the kaparas, but the shchita of the birds. It's also to eat it. Because it looks like you're bringing chutz. You're shechting an animal looks like a korban outside. So he says, what they used to take the tarnagol's head, and they would hang it with the feathers by the doorpost with garlic. I think it will certainly keep out the vampires, that's for sure. Behavalim harbe and other nonsense, sheniru be'enai dekedarke amori, v'dachakti al zeh harbe. The Rashba said, I think he thought it's all darke amori, and he pushed very hard. U'bechesed elyon, this must be a first in Jewish history, where the Balabatim actually listened to the rabbi, to be mevatel a long-standing minhag. Rashba says he might stamp out the practice in Barcelona, although I kind of wonder what people were doing behind the doors. All right, so that's what he says. But Aval Pishamati, Mi Pianoshim Hagunim Obe Ashkenaz, Hayoshim Imano Bebes Amedrash. I might say this might be the Rush. I heard from Anashim Hagunim, very wonderful people from Ashkenaz who sit in our base Medrash. Shekol Rabbonei Artsam Osim Kein Arve Yom HaKippurim. Despite that fact, I still asked him. Gam shamati kinishal Rav Haigon zav amar shekeinagu. They asked Rav Haigon, we saw the tshuva that the Rush quoted, and he answered that that's the minhag. Im koze manati aminag as emeimeder. The Rashba said, despite that, I still extirpated this practice from our city. Umikom akom, but any roa lifsal ashchita. I wouldn't argue that the shchita is psula the way the questioner was arguing. Mimnei shelo pasul al ashochet l'shem davar hanader vanida. He's going to go into the details as to why he thinks it doesn't run afoul of the prohibition of looking like shchutei chutz, of shechtei a carbon outside. But nonetheless, the Rashba was vehemently opposed to the practice. It should not surprise you, I probably should have cited it, that in Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber writes, he writes gently, Yesh lem noah haminhag. He said it would be appropriate to kind of refrain from the practice. And that applies, and then the Ramah comes along and defends the practice. I know that there are people, when I was a kid at least, we used to use money. I don't anymore, and I would say the following. Using money, I mean, it's a mitzvah to give it to tzedakah, but using money misses really the whole point of it. The purpose of karbanos, or something that at least reminds us of karbanos, is it's the way the Torah says in Parshas, the part of Achrayimos that we're not going to read tomorrow, in the middle chapter of Achrayimos, where it says, "Vanin l'sativ lochem al mizbeach lechaper al nafshoseichem." You're not allowed to eat blood because the blood was given on the mizbeach in lieu of our blood. Right? We say that when we fast, the chelev, our chelev and our dam, which is nisma'it, should be taken as a carbon, right? But you bring a carbon, you burn the chelev on the mizbeach, it's like our fat being burned. You throw the dam on the mizbeach, it's like our dam being thrown on the mizbeach. To do it just with money, I'm not saying you shouldn't do it, but it doesn't really, if you're going to do kaparis, it doesn't really capture the visceral impact of what kaparis is supposed to do. Either way, it's a mitzvah to give tzedakah to the aniyim. So some people do kaparis and some people don't do kaparis.
Rabbi, I believe
that, live in Brooklyn.
I believe that the Rabbi Yosef Cairo was very adamant against it. From that
mistake, the Mechaber. So the Mechaber says Yishol Noa Minog. He says off the Minog. He said you should restrain. One should refrain from doing such a thing. He doesn't, I think, say Darche Amori as strong as the Rashba does, but it's clear he.
Hasidim don't follow Minhagim. These Minhagim. A Hasidim in Brooklyn specifically have a whole practice where they have it, where they bring the chickens and the coops and the Ganza Maisa.
Yeah.
Right on the main street.
They have it done. I don't know if they're doing it this year because of COVID, but I know who does it in Teaneck in the parking lot of either TABC or Mayanot. They do kaparos every year. So
yeah, but that's a small group. This is, you're talking about 1,000 people come together.
Yes, I got it. A lot of chickens and a lot of blood.
Just fire them, don't do it. Fire them, don't do it. Generally, huh? I guess.
I don't know, but I wouldn't bet on it for sure. I just don't know. I'll close with mention of one last practice, of Erev Yom HaKippurim, which is Kol Nidre. Kol Nidre has a very long history. Very briefly, once upon a time, Kol Nidre was intended as Hataras Nedarim, and when you recited the paragraph, the nusach was Miyom Kippurim Sha'avar Ayom Kippurim Zeh. And that was the practice. The Gaonim did not like Kol Nidarim; they were adamantly opposed. Kol Nidre, they were adamantly opposed to it. But the practice, which probably came from Eretz Yisrael, spread to Babel, and it really, really took root. Rabbeinu Tam came along and said that Hataras Nedarim does not work in the way it's done. He lists like four or five different objections as to why it won't work. Pashtus's Rabbeinu Tam is correct. And Rabbeinu Tam changed the nusach of Kol Nidre to Miyom Kippurim Zad Yom Kippurim Abba Aleinu Tova. And he tried changing a few of the verbs. And the purpose of Kol Nidre in Rabbeinu Tam's form, which is, I think, the main text in our Machzorim, our Machzorim may have kind of something in parentheses. I don't know what Minag Kej is, if the Chasam recites both or only Miyom Kippurim Zeh Yom Kippurim Haba Leinu L'Tova. But Rabbeinu Tam said that this was based upon a Mishnah in Nedarim, with the way the Gemara understands it, that if you don't want your Nedarim all year to be binding, you don't have to be a Taras Nedarim. In advance, you make a condition. Any Nedarim that I take during the coming year won't be binding. There are certain conditions attached to it. What's interesting, and what I think points to the fact again, that this was not the original practice, the way Rabbeinu Tam changed it, is that you're not allowed, we start Kol Nidre before Yom Kippur. Now, we perhaps should start, well, the way we do it, it doesn't matter. But if Yom Kippur is Hatar, if Kol Nidre is Hataras Nedarim, you're not allowed to do Hataras Nedarim on Shabbos or Yom Tov unless it's needed for something on Yom Tov. Let's say I took a neder not to get any hana from any food I own. And now Shabbos comes and I can't have Onik Shabbos. So I go to the Chacham and I do Hataras Nedarim. When we do Kol Nidre, even assuming it would work, it's not Litzarach Yom Kippur. There's nothing that we need on Yom Kippur. Therefore, you're not allowed to do it on Shabbos or on Yom Tov. And that is why Kol Nidre actually is originally done before Leil Yom Kippur. We start Mibod Yom. The way we do Kol Nidre, which it's only about a condition for the future, it's not a Taras Nedarim, and it doesn't require a Beis Din, so then really technically speaking, it doesn't actually matter when Kol Nidre is done. And it can be done even on Yom Kippur.
How do you do it in Jersey?
I'll only speak to my shul that I daven in. At Congregation Rina Yisrael, we do Miyom Kippurim Zad Yom Kippurim Haba. We do it as not Hataras Nedarim.
I don't know what they do in KJ. I don't know. I don't know.
Larry, you're most likely to know.
They use both.
Both? You're muted, Larry.
In the conservative group, they do both, right in the Maksa.
Larry, what?
I think Miyom Kippurim Zad Yom Kippurim Haba.
Okay. I think what's happened in the Machzorah now, some of them only print Miyom Kippur Zad Yom Kippur Haba. Some of them put in parentheses. The Art School puts in parentheses. The Rina Yisrael puts in parentheses. First, Miyom Kippur Zad Yom Kippurim. I mean, Yom Kippurim Shabbat Yom Kippur Zad. And then the rest of it is in the main text. So anyway, so that's when we say Kol Nidre tonight, you'll pay attention to the Nusach, and that's what it will be about. I will like to wish everybody a Gemar Chasima Tova and a good Geben Shor, a good Yom Tov, a meaningful and easy fast, and a Chag Sameach as well. Due to the confluence of the way Yom Tov falls out, we will resume Be'ezus Hashem, our Shir on Brachos, the week after Simchas Torah.
Gemar Chasima Tova.